WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
Let me introduce soprano Roberta Peters, who made her debut at the Met when she was 19 and has sung with the Met every season since. She's performed over 550 times with the Metropolitan Opera, including 55 Saturday afternoon Texaco broadcasts. She's performed in the Soviet Union, where she became the first American-born artist to receive the Bolshoi Medal. She was also the first American singer invited by the People's Republic of China to perform and hold classes. Roberta Peters will be doing a benefit performance on Sunday, April 24th at the congregation Rodof Shalom at 615 North Broad Street. This is a benefit for the congregation. The performance will begin at 7:15. This is, again, the evening of April 24th. And for more information, you can call 627-6747. That's 627-6747. And I'll have that information again for you a little later. Before we talk, let's listen to a recording of hers in which she is performing an aria from Verdi's A Masked Ball. Roberta Peters, as recorded in 1955, singing the aria Sapo Voreste from Verdi's A Masked Ball, and that featured the Metropolitan Opera Orchestra conducted by Dimitri Mitropoulos. It seems now, Roberta Peters, that opera stars, the two big opera stars, are men now, Luciano Pavarotti and Placido Domingo. And it used to be, it seems, that the famous opera stars were women, the divas. Has there been a shift in the power base
There's
of opera?
There's been sort of a shift, I would say, but also the media had so much to do with it. Television brings everybody very, very close, and both gentlemen have done a tremendous amount of television. Of course, Pavarotti's success is even, I think, more extraordinary, the way the American public has just taken to him in an unbelievable way. He's become great household word. And of course, Mr. Domingo, the same. But yes, there used to be more divas, and still, I mean, Sutherland, Joan Sutherland is still very, very well known. And there are some women who are very well known too. Teresa Stratus. There are names. And some of them are American, I'm very glad to say. But those two have had quite unusual careers.
Has the star system changed since you began performing?
A little bit, but I wanted to say, you know, there's no best. You say Pavarotti is the best or Domingo the best. There is no best. There, each one has their place, and each one is great. I mean, in this, there's a golden age. There was a golden age. People talk about that, but today is the golden age too. We have great, great singers today. Perhaps as great, if not greater. I think a great deal more attention is paid to detail musically. The musical content is very important. Years ago, if they held a high note, that's what the audience wanted and that's what they cheered for. Today, a lot more is taken into account, the production, the costumes, the acting, and the musical phrasing. All of that, besides the voice, is extremely important.
Has the approach to diet and to taking care of your equipment, so to speak, changed?
Well, you wouldn't know it by Mr. Pavarotti, would you? He's so very big. I believe, yes, it has. Also for the same reason, or part of the same reason I just mentioned, and that is television. It's forced so many people to look at themselves on the screen and change a little bit about the way they look and the way they sing. Because sometimes opera singers don't realize that they make faces. They don't have to really make faces. They're just not aware of it. And yes, there is a change. I've always maintained that you don't have to be fat. I've still maintained a size 8, and thank God I have to work harder as I get older. But I think you feel so much better, and if you feel better, you've got to sing better if you're not so heavy. Now, if you're born where your mother feeds you and force feeds you and you're generally heavy as you grow up, well, that's the way you're going to be. But that doesn't have anything to do with the singing. I really don't think so.
Did anyone ever try to fatten you up? Saying that it will improve your singing or give
improve
you more
my
resonance?
Singing? No. I reached the back of the Met for all these years up to the last row, and I've never. Although I do a pasta and have to watch myself, but I've never really understood why they make this business about being fat such a thing. It's not necessary. It really isn't. It's just not disciplined at all.
It's my understanding that the voice of an opera singer sometimes won't mature until, say, the mid-30s or even a little later than that. Do you think that's true?
No, I don't think it's true. Actually, it depends on the voice. I should put it that way. The heavier voices do mature a little bit later. My type of a voice, which is a coloratura, a lighter quality voice, matures a lot earlier. I've had mothers come to me and say, you know, listen to my daughter, which I do whenever I can. But I have to say different things to different people because everybody is not alike. We're not machines. And some youngsters are more mature and ready to start to study before others. Usually the younger, the higher voices one can work with at an early age. I started studying when I was 13. And it is very young, but a lot of other voices I say to wait longer.
Were you listening to a lot of opera when you were 13?
No, there was no opera in my background whatsoever, which is really very strange. My mother always loved the theater, but she really didn't know much about opera. And the way I came to study altogether was through a good friend, Jan Pierce, and he recommended me to a wonderful, wonderful teacher. And I studied with him, and Mr. Pierce came occasionally to hear my progress, and when he thought I was ready, he came up to my studio, actually, to my teacher's studio with Saul Hurock, the great impresario, and then they took me to Mr. Bing. So the Met was my first job, which is really so surprising when I look back. I can't get over it because I know how youngsters have to struggle today, and I was very, very fortunate. But those 6 or 7 years that I studied from 13 to 19, when I had my audition at the Met, were intense study. I left school to study privately, and I had a fantastic education, studied French, Italian, German, knew 20 operas before I got into the Met. So, you know, I'm saying this only because I like the young people to realize, the young singers, students, what it takes. It's sometimes they want everything very quickly. You can't do it that quickly. You really have to give it a lot of time.
Why did you study opera if it wasn't a music that you were listening to?
I just loved it once I got to it. I used to sing little arias and things, which were probably wrong for my voice before I started with this teacher. But I took to it, and of course I took to the teacher so much. I was very wrapped up with him all those years. I had 6 lessons a week, 6 days a week. I would come down from the Bronx. I lived in the Bronx. By train I came, all hours of the day and night. I was never afraid to go by train, and was thrown immediately into an adult world at that age when I left school, and heard all the greatest artists coming through New York at Carnegie and at the Metropolitan. I was a standee, and I was drinking in all that without even realizing it.
What were some of the early things that you learned that were useful about resonance and projection?
Well, I had a teacher who helped me to get a technique, which I still rely on at this moment, and we did all kinds of scales. He even insisted that I do the clarinet studies. There's a Close, K-L-O-S-E, studies, and I worked those and sang those as part of my exercises. So we worked on agility a great deal. We worked on the messa di voce, which is the holding one note and attacking it very softly and swelling it on the same note and then coming back. And all that's very, very important, because if you could do that, then you know that your voice, your chords, are working perfectly. Because you can't sing softly unless you're doing it correctly. You can yell or scream up to a certain point until you yell yourself hoarse and hurt your chords. But it's very difficult to sing piano if you're doing it wrong.
Why is that harder than singing loud?
Because the chords have to vibrate very, very quickly.
Those Close studies and you know, other exercises, yeah, they can, I think, be very, very boring.
Yes, they were boring.
What do you do to make them interesting?
Well, you work on the phrasing, and you work on the musical line. That's the only thing that I could think of doing. And you vary the dynamics. That's the only thing. I did some Mozart piano things, too, and but the Close clarinet, I remember very clear. Plus, of course, all the vocal studies. There was Panofka, and there was the Garcia studies, G-A-R-C-I-A. He was a famous singer, and then a famous teacher wrote a big book with different combinations of scales and arpeggi and things like that. So I really worked very, very hard. Studied, of course, solfège and harmony and theory, and I was very, very lucky. I was an only child living in New York and got to the right teacher at an early age. And the teacher, in turn, sent me to all these other marvelous people, an excellent coach for opera, Italian opera, and then another coach for French opera, another coach for German opera. And I went from the Bronx, as I told you, by train, and went from one place to another in Manhattan.
Did opera symbolize something to your family?
Oh, yes.
What did it symbolize?
Well, this, something to reach for, to something fine and beautiful that they hadn't experienced too much in their lives.
In your own personal listening now, do you listen to much popular music?
I listen to some. I tell you, my boys, I have two sons, and they are into their own music. They're not too hot on opera. But they're coming back to it, I think, or they're coming to it now after they're grown up. But I do some folk music in my recitals occasionally. And so if they find, you know, a record or something that they like, they ask me to come in. And we have a pretty good rapport about that. They love Jean-Pierre Rampal, and they go to the symphonies much more often than they used to.
Roberta Peters is my guest, if you're just joining us. It seems that a lot of times people who perform popular music, you know, for a living and who are known through their popular music will occasionally put a classical piece in their repertoire to show off how good their technique is. And on the other hand, classical performers and opera singers will sometimes do popular material to show, perhaps, or because they enjoy it, that they can do it too. I think Pavarotti just... I guess it's from the Yes, Yes, Giorgio
That's
album.
Right. The song was on the Oscars the other day.
Oh, was it?
Yes. It was up for one of the Oscar awards, the song that he sang.
Oh, what do you think of that tradition of opera singers doing pop material? And do you think that most opera singers can handle it well?
I think they can't handle it too well. I think they overblow it, you know, and they try to make it too, you know, they take each word so strongly. No, you have to know how to do it, and you have to have a little bit of understanding and listen to a lot of the others. Pop singers to really get the style. It's very hard.
Yeah.
It's very, for an opera singer especially, to play. See, opera is so bigger than life. You know, we do the big gestures and we have to reach so far. Most pop singers just sit with a little mic in front of them. Their voices are not big. So, you know, there's another whole syndrome to doing it.
Who are some of your favorite popular singers?
Oh, gosh. I like Carly Simon a lot. She's real good. And I'm trying to think of the other. I like Nina Simone, too. She does beautiful things. My kids listen to this one other lady. Can't think of her. Well, I do like Aretha Franklin. That's not, that's sort of soul music. I don't know if you'd call it that. I like her stuff very much. And Roberta Flack, I've listened to her things, too.
You were the first American singer invited to the People's Republic of China to perform there and to hold workshops as well. Did they know much about American music?
I didn't hear them do American music, which is interesting.
Oh, so what were you listening to there?
Well, they asked me to conduct three master classes in the three cities, in Peking, Shanghai, and Canton.
Mm-hmm.
And as you know, the Cultural Revolution had been on for 10 years. It was over by 76 or 77. During that time, the country was sealed off. And if they listened to Western music, they were put in jail. All the music was taken away from them, torn up, and they had nothing. So after that, they started to rebuild. And they wanted me to listen to them do arias, if you can imagine, mostly in Italian, some in French. And I could tell while they were singing, although they had beautiful quality voices, very sweet voices, they didn't know what they were saying. You could tell right away. But I had heard one of the girls do one of the arias that I do from the Barber of Seville, the Una Voce Poco Fa. And I said to myself, gee, that sounds so familiar, the cadenza she was doing. Sure enough, she had had my record. Someone gave her my record, and so she did the exact same cadenzas as I did. But I had two suggestions for them, to send over the teachers to the United States, because I think we really do have wonderful teachers over here, to Juilliard or wherever, and send them here and sort of show them the way we work. And then they can bring it back to their youngsters to sort of show them what to do, at least go in the right direction. And the other thing was for Americans to send over as much music as they could, sheet music, scores, opera scores, because they were bereft. I mean, they were just... nothing was left. And it was a most fascinating experience. They just seemed to adore Western music, classical music. I didn't hear any pop, I didn't hear any American.
Did you listen to much Chinese music when you were there?
Yes, I listened to some, and it's so different because the whole production is very different. In fact, I was given a few pieces, which I haven't used yet, to sing sort of folk songs of the Chinese. And in fact, I did a Chinese song. CBS 60 Minutes did a segment on my trip. And on there I do a Chinese song just as a gesture. I did it phonetically. Of course, I don't speak Chinese. I had done it in Russia, too, when I sang a Russian, just as an encore. And I was more nervous for that song than I was for the whole concert because, you know, that we were, you know, trying to be understood.
Were you prompted by the State Department before you went on how to conduct yourself?
No, I was there during the Carter regime, and I did go to the White House. President Carter asked to see me and just wished me well since I was the first American since 1949 to be asked. And we were treated royally, if you could say royally in a communist country, but they did treat us very well, and we had access to wherever we wanted to go. So it was a fascinating trip. It's like going back in time, 40, 50 years. They've got a lot of catching up to do. But if they keep that bridge open between the two countries, perhaps they will catch up by the end of the century. They're willing and able. They're very lovely, warm, friendly people.
Do you mean like catch up culturally or in terms of technology?
I'm talking about my field. I'm talking about music. But I don't know what's happening there now. There's so much dissension. I was very sad to see what's going on because of this lovely little Chinese girl who wanted to come here. So you never know.
Catching up is, I guess, in a way, a funny word to use about opera, since so many people feel that the opera audience and the classical music audience is resistant to change and don't want to hear modern operas or even modern symphonies.
Well, there haven't been too many modern operas.
Uh-huh.
There are very few modern operas, and one of the reasons, I guess, the inspiration has to be there too, but it costs a lot of money. It's to give a commission to a composer. He's got to take a lot of time to write an opera, and it has to be commissioned. And then it to play it once or twice, to spend all that money just for once, it's very difficult.
You've performed in Europe as well as around America.
Yes, I have.
Is opera treated differently in Europe? Is it a more popular art form than it is?
It's more popular over there because it's their form. It's a foreign form to us. our natural form here is the musical theater. That's what most people have been brought up with. But opera, of course, was born over there, born in Italy, and it seems they've been listening over the generations. So youngsters go in Germany, go to the opera, and as we would go to a movie. And they still do. They really do patronize the opera. I was over there. I go as a guest. I don't really spend that much time to many of these opera houses. And I'm amazed when I come out the stage door and see the amount of material that they have on me that I didn't even know existed. And young kids, it's really... But I have to say it in proportion. The proportion is not as many people as rock or popular music never has been. But it seems to me that opera is doing much, 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 much better because of those Saturday broadcasts, which were the forerunner where people who never could get to an opera house could hear some, and then the live from Lincoln Center and all the exposure that opera singers have had on television. I think it's really marvelous because it brings us down. You know, they know we don't have horns. You know, we're not from outer space, that we have families and that we're interested in the world, that we're not one-dimensional people, that we have, you know, things that interest us too besides opera.
Do you like to perform operas as translated into English when they're written in another tongue?
Very seldom. Some of the comic operas lend themselves pretty well. I've done Così fan tutte, Mozart, in English, in a very, very good translation. I should really preface it by saying it has to be a good translation for any opera. But I must say I like to do and hear La Bohème in Italian rather than in English. I mean, but I think that some of the workshops, it would have a place to do in English. You know, when you're studying and really working on opera, you want to get down to the real feeling of it, know the words, it's fine. But the Italian language is so beautiful and was written that way, and I think it should stay that way.
Do you think it makes it harder for Americans to understand what it is they're listening to when it's sung in another language? I was thinking that Europeans tend to know
the language.
Two or three languages,
yes.
And most Americans just know
one. Well, I think it's the
one.
Duty of Americans to get the libretto and read the libretto when mm-hmm. they sit down and know what's going on. If five people are singing at the same time, you can't hear what they're saying. And very often you can't hear what they're saying in English. So if you familiarize yourself with the libretto and know what's going on and sit back and listen to the beautiful melodies and enjoy it, well, that's all you really have to do. It's a story with music.
Who are the younger audiences now? Do you have any idea?
A lot of college kids are into it. Very often I stay after a recital or a concert in out of New York and rap with the kids, and I'm amazed at how much they are able to absorb. I like to know what they enjoyed in my concert or, you know, what reached them, what really reached them. And they're really quite into it.
You're going to be performing a benefit concert Sunday, April 24th.
Right.
In Philadelphia for a congregation, Rodef Shalom. What kind of material will you be performing?
I'm going to be doing more of an operatic concert. That's what they seem to want. I very often, and I just did a concert in Lincoln Center, I do a different kind of a recital, and that would be with Bach and Handel and Richard Strauss, whom I adore, and Ravel. But they wanted an opera concert here. The first half will be all opera, familiar arias, Rigoletto, Barbara Seville, etc., some Mozart arias. And the second half will be Jewish and Hebrew songs. And I will talk a little bit about my trips to Israel and also a Viennese group of songs. So it's a sort of a lighter evening. But I'll be back this summer, going to be at the Dell again, or the Fred Mann Center, Music Center. So I like Philadelphia. I come a lot.
Let me give the details on this benefit concert. It will be
sure.
Sunday evening, April 24th at 7:15 at Congregation Road of Shalom at 615 North Broad Street. And for more information, you can call 627-6747. That's 627-6747.
I'd like to congratulate you, if I may, on this wonderful drive that you had and how much you reached your goal and how great
yeah,
that is,
right.
Really, because I do some work for PBS.
It was hard.
And I know what it is to keep asking the same people for money, and such a marvelous station, and they give you so much for it.
You're on the board at the Met now, aren't you?
Yes, I'm on the board of the Metropolitan Opera Guild. And they're having, the Met is having their 100th birthday next season. 1883-84, the Met opened with Faust. And they're going to do Faust next year, too. So it will round out 100 years. They have an endowment fund that they're trying to raise $100 million for, of which they already have $70 million. And I'm going around the country speaking for them, telling them a little bit about what I think of the Met and my experiences there.
Opera is a...
Speaking to the corporate community, too.
Opera is an especially expensive form of musical theater because there tends to be very elaborate sets and costumes.
Sure is.
The orchestra. And whereas something on Broadway can maybe, if it's successful, run 5-6 years, an opera is usually a week or two.
That's right.
Then there's another one moving
in behind. They do 10 performances and, 12 performances in a season. That's very true. And ticket prices are $55 top. And the season is 95% sold out. I just don't know how to value it. I'm thrilled because I'm glad for the Met that they're doing so well. But it's really extraordinary, don't you think, that opera is selling out so well?
Are there problems in fundraising now with opera? And
Well, now that there have been cuts in the budget, yes. We're constantly talking to the corporate community, and they are doing much better than I thought they would in the beginning.
Does it ever trouble you that only people who can afford that much money can get to see the opera, unless if they stay home and watch it on TV?
Well, it troubles me a little bit. I was a standee. I had spent my few bucks. Of course, it's more now than when I first started, but... if people want to come, they find a way to come. I think it's doing much, much better than when I first started.
The way, I guess, to success in opera and some classical music is through competitions. Do you have faith in those competitions?
I never had to go through it, so I really am not up on it. I'm not a good person to ask that question, I guess, because I don't know what it entails, except seeing that movie, which was, I'm sure, not too realistic. I think it was called The Competition.
Oh, right.
Yeah, remember it? About
yeah,
two
I didn't
piano
see it. Yeah.
And but no, I really don't know about the competitions. If I had a student and they wanted to try out, of course, if I felt they were ready, I would think that they're good. I don't know if you have to go from one to the other, over and over and doing it. I don't know how you would, I probably wouldn't enjoy that too much.
Yeah.
But it might be a good stepping stone.
Well,
I think the intention is good.
Just briefly, did you see Fitzcarraldo or Diva?
No, I didn't see Diva. I haven't seen. I met the lady. I know her name. Wilhelmina Fernandez, yes. But I haven't seen the movies.
Okay, well, I want to thank you very much for
joining
us.
It's so nice
to
talk to you.
For being here.
Thanks.
Roberta Peters has been my guest, and she's been performing with the Metropolitan Opera for about 33 years now. She'll be performing in Philadelphia Sunday, April 24th at Congregation Rodef Shalom at 615 North Broad Street. This will be a benefit for the congregation. It will begin at 7:15. That's April 24th. And for more information, you can call 627-6747. That's 627-6747.